He's kind of like the Joe Rogan of the hospitality industry right now.
Hey everyone, I was hoping to get this message put together sooner, but things like this unfortunately take time to set up. I just want to say that the acts of war against Ukraine break my heart, and I know as a prior service member myself that my thoughts and prayers go out to everyone who's fighting the fight that they really shouldn't have to. That being said, we have been working behind the scenes with all of our podcasts and podcast partners to put a fund together in order to pay for any refugee housing and other needs that go alongside that, like food, water, and any clothing needs. Internally, many podcasts in the Hospitality FM network have voluntarily given up sponsorship money in order to donate to the cause and are working on a unified message in order to spread throughout all of our podcasts. So this is me calling out to all of our property manager friends, industry experts, and anyone knowing of those providing lodging for Ukrainian refugees seeking safety. You can contact me directly at Will with one L, W-I-L, at slicktalkmedia.com. We have an internal document that is being updated in real time, so if anyone could share this message within your network, we'd greatly appreciate it. I'm also placing in the show notes a link to our GoFundMe and landing page for Rentals to Rescue. That's rentalstorescue.com, where we're putting funds together in order to, again, provide finances for any of these lodging and relocation needs. So thank you so much for tuning into this quick message. I hope you guys are all well and safe, as I know we have tons of listeners in Ukraine and other countries in Europe. So thank you so much for tuning in, and I hope you guys enjoy this episode.
What was the one thing that you've learned or taken from your entrepreneurial journey that you would say would be really important for anybody else to just be aware of or to think about when they get into this, I don't know if you call it a journey or a lifestyle or whatever, but yeah, what would that one thing be?
I'd say that it's harder than it looks would be one, but at the same time, it's easier than it looks. It's keeping at it, keep doing the next right thing, keep the resilience going. Always be honest and transparent in your dealings. I believe in business karma. You know, what you put out there does come back. Always kind of just be a good person in business as well, I think is really important.
You're listening to Slick Talk, the hospitality podcast, a podcast for those who are in and around the hospitality industry who love, live, and breathe what they do. You can join us for candid and unscripted conversations with hospitality experts and founders as we go deeper into their personal stories while they're sharing their triumphs and trials that got them to where they are today. I'm your host, Will Slickers, and you're listening to an episode of Slick Talk, the hospitality podcast. Now, let's begin. What's up, all my Slick Talkers? This episode is brought to you by my friends at Hostfully. Now, these are the days where enough is enough with managing multiple calendars for your properties in order just to make sure you don't get double booked. And not having a website for your guests to get to know your story and book direct? You can stop stressing, at least a little bit, and check out my friends at Hostfully. Hostfully was created by hosts for hosts, and they understand the importance of centralizing operations, inboxes, calendars, and of course, keeping up with the times and the industry data. You can go to hostfully.com, use my code SLICKTALK20 to get access to their digital guidebooks and their property management software. I use them as well, and I love the simplicity of their product. Now, I hope you enjoyed this episode of Slick Talk, the hospitality podcast. Now sit back and enjoy. All right, everybody, welcome back to Slick Talk. And this episode is so special because it's also super overdue. So Jessica from Abode PR, we're good friends. We've been working together on multiple podcast episodes, multiple media and PR collaborations in the past for the last, like, I would say, 2 years? So this podcast is definitely overdue. But welcome to the podcast, Jessica. How are you doing today?
I'm really good, Will. Thank you so much for having me. And I remember when you sent us when you launched the podcast, you sent us a request to interview you on our website and do an interview about you and about the podcast. And that, I mean, that was pre-COVID, you know, maybe it was even more than 2 years ago.
Yeah. I think it was like early 2019 before everything. I think I was still a hotel manager at the time too. I don't know.
I think you were. Yeah, you were.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah. We were doing the Vacation Rental Mastermind series. We had Matt Landau and Breezeway, which is like a big connection with us, and then we had Noise Aware, Air DNA. So yeah, that was fun. That was a good series. Takes me back to the good old days. Well, excited to jump into your story, because I think when you and I did our pre-chat, and all the audience members know that before any guest ever shows up on the show, we always have a conversation beforehand. Unless you're super special, we just jump right in. But those are rare moments. That'd be like a Brian Chesky thing where I'd be like, hey, let's just record right now.
Yeah, why not? Yeah, super special or no time for the pre-tour.
Yes, exactly. That too. But I think it goes into, there's a lot to unpack with your story, a lot to unpack with PR and media. So I kind of just want to jump right into, how did you get into hospitality, travel? And then I saw on your previous experiences, you know, I did LinkedIn stalk you a little bit, you know, getting a lot into content and marketing. So maybe just trying to tell us the beginning of your story and kind of where you got started with everything.
Yeah, absolutely, Will. And I was just going to say something about the fact that we've known each other 2.5 years, which is a lifetime in this industry. So much changes in such a short period of time. So even though, you know, it may not seem like a long time, it's a lifetime, particularly in short-term rentals.
I agree.
So I'll tell you my story, Will. I have been in travel for, and I'm going to give my age away, so probably 25 years. And I, despite my accent, I'm actually Canadian as well as British, and I've had a long kind of history with Canada. I've lived over there lots of different times, and it's been very much part of my DNA, although I, you know, am based in the UK now, although we work with quite a few Canadian companies.
Yes.
But I had a dream after I finished university, and I wanted to start a travel company selling cottage holidays to Canada, Lakeside, Ontario cottage holidays. And it was a holiday that I used to do as a child. We'd go and visit my uncle in Ontario. We'd go up to the lake, stay in at his cottage, canoe on the lake, listen to the loons, you know. And it was, in my view, it was the most ideal vacation that anybody could have. But it was a product that people in the UK knew nothing about. Now, remember, this is way before, you know, Airbnb. We did have the internet back then, but it was, you know, a long time ago. And I wanted to bring, I'm very entrepreneurial kind of by nature, and I wanted to bring this product to the UK. I really saw it as a potential fit. And so I went and got a job with a Canadian travel company in London, and I started to get the knowledge about, you know, all about Canadian travel, and I loved it. And I ended up being the PR and marketing manager of this travel company. But that started me in travel. And I did actually set up my own travel company, a booking site called Triptos.com. I think it was about 2011 that I did this. And so I was kind of in travel and in lodging. I've also worked in some other areas. I've done sort of things as boring as kind of electronics PR and different types of sectors, but travel's always been in my DNA. And I launched my own, and PR has always been in my DNA, but I launched my travel company, and I did it for about 3 years. It went well, and I actually sold Heather Bayer's cottages through this travel company. So I was kind of getting to know the vacation rental scene, and I did a lot of listening. And of course, things were really growing and building there. Airbnb had launched. There was lots of tech solutions kind of coming, and my travel company didn't work, but the PR side of the things did work. And I decided to actually just focus on what I really loved, which is PR and marketing, and go that route. And so 5 years ago, I kind of just realized that there was a gap in the market here. And I decided to specialize, like really become an expert in at the time. We were just calling it the vacation rental industry. So become a real expert. And very quickly, I got some big clients, you know, one of the sort of the biggest PMSs in the space, big channel manager, a couple of really big operators as well. And from there, it's sort of grown. And the company Abode PR, we've grown with it. So we now work with hotel technology and multifamily technology. We're going into some other lodging verticals. But that's really how I got into hospitality, is initially just Canadian travel, then into vacation rentals, and now kind of beyond. And I absolutely love it. Like, it's in my DNA, that travel hospitality side.
I love it. And congratulations on 5 years. I think that's that's a big celebration for business. It's a big celebration for you as a person, especially knowing that you had a company prior to Abode. So I want to ask you a question. I wrote it down while you were talking because it just kind of was one of those questions I didn't want to forget. But for you, where do you think your entrepreneurial itch or aspiration has come from? Were you exposed to, you know, entrepreneurs early on, or were you just kind of always that free spirit that just, you know, it's great to get, you know, a nice steady income, but at the end of the day, you want to do it on your own terms. What was that initial drive from?
Well, I would say I'm unemployable. Like, I can't have somebody else as my boss is probably why a lot of us do this. But there is, I think it's, for me, it's a drive. It's a creative drive. And for me, business is my creative outlet. Now, when I was a child, I probably had about five businesses before I even got into high school. And my first business, I was about 8 or 9, and I invented this thing called the chest warmer. And it was a knitted, it was like a knitted square. And it was, I grew up in Hong Kong till I was 8 or 9, and then we moved to England, and it was very cold in England. So I invented this thing, this woolen thing that people could put here, and I sold it for £1 on the streets of Oxford, which is where we were. And people actually bought it for that. And that was my first invention and my first business. And I had, you know, lots of other ones all through school. And so I just think it's a spirit, it's a drive. It's what gets me up in the morning, is that creative growing. And I love working with other entrepreneurs and also, you know, businesses, because I love watching them grow and improve and all of those things. And I think also that I would be, you know, I'd be terrible if I had a boss. Although I have lots of bosses because we have lots of clients, but actually somebody telling me what to do would be very difficult for me.
Yes. I always wondered why I had trouble, not that I was a bad employee, but why I had trouble when I was like, I would get shut down with ideas or whatever. But it's just so funny to see, like, I don't know about you, but when I was a kid, I was a horrible drawer. Like, you should never ask me to draw or sketch anything ever, like, horrible idea. But I was a kid, I drew like these like superhero alien things. I sold them to my neighbors. They actually bought them for like, I don't know, like maybe 50 cents at a time. And then I did lemonade stands, but no one actually sat down and was like, hey, what you're doing, like this, like idea of I'm going to create something to sell, a product or service to sell to strangers or people in your neighborhood. Like, no one sat down and was like, this is an entrepreneurial like trait. You should probably explore this. Maybe you should, you know, high school, I sold candy bars. I did all those stuff without like really knowing what entrepreneurism was. Did you ever have somebody kind of come in and mentor you in that sense of like, hey, Jessica, I don't know if you know this, but all these things that you've done over your life, maybe as a close friend or family member, but, you know, all these things that you've done really showcase like that you're an entrepreneur. You're not a worker. You're a queen bee. You need to be the queen bee and stop working for other people. Was there ever a moment like that for you?
Yeah. So I would say in my family, my mother is very similar to me. So she had always had a business and was very supportive in allowing that side of me to flourish. So I would say definitely my mother, and also her family, they're all self-employed on my mother's side of the family of varying, you know, successes and varying types of businesses. So it was really kind of in the family culture to do it. But I've had so many mentors as well with the different businesses, different, you know, I couldn't do anything that I do without having mentors, coaches, mentors, some paid, some unpaid, advisors. You know, it's very much, I have a real kind of support network of expertise around me, and have done, you know, for many, many years.
I love it. And Can I ask, for when you started your first company to Abode, did you take a break at all? Did you have like a moment where you needed to sit down and reflect, or did you kind of just jump right into PR? Like, you're like, you know what, this isn't working, this, or it's not working the way I want it to. I want to go with my passion into PR. Did you just jump right in?
Yeah, it's interesting, because when I did the travel company, I really thought that was my passion. You know, I'd wanted to do that for years until I was finally able to kind of launch and do that. So the transition actually to Abode and doing, you know, PR rather than running a, you know, running a digital platform kind of came naturally, actually. And I people came to me because I would get to know people, and almost it came by default. People would say, you know, would you do this for us? We see that you're good at that, or could you do that? Or I'd see the opportunities. So, but I'm like anybody who's kind of started a business. I've had to do some things that I don't want to do as well. You know, I've had to do jobs that I haven't wanted to do, or work with clients that I haven't wanted, to make sure that I can do, you know, eventually. And now I'm at this place. You know, we have a team of 10 now. You know, this is something quite substantial, and we are growing. So, you know, all the kind of things that I've done in the past have all led to this as well.
100%. It's very inspirational to watch. You know, I think before COVID, how many people were you at when we met? Like 3 or 4?
Two.
Okay.
Yeah. We were 2, and we lost 80% of our business in the first week of COVID. Yeah. And then, you know, within 6 months, I knew that everything would be fine, because that I had so many kind of requests for calls, etc. That yeah. Just once the tech companies, you know, found their feet again, you know, this, everything was absolutely fine. You know, it was more the kind of uncertainty around the pandemic in the beginning.
Yeah.
Well, let's talk to keep the faith, you know, well, for everybody.
Yeah. Well, I was going to say, let's talk about that. That's the biggest thing with entrepreneurship, is that it's, I hate describing it as a roller coaster, but you know, I quit my day job as a hotel manager December 27th, 2019. I'll never forget the day, but I'll never forget the day when I was in London at the Shorey's Award, watching the president of the United States saying the borders are closed. No one's coming home, basically, unless you're American and all this other stuff. And I was like, oh, great. And then, you know, we all thought 2 weeks flatten the curve, like, great, sounds fine. Like, we've been through something like this before, probably, maybe not my lifetime, but, you know, going like, okay, whatever, it's going to be fine. And then just months and months and months kept dragging on. And like you said, lost 80% of your business. I lost everything too. So let's talk about that. I hate the roller coaster comparison, but it really is like a... Like we talk about flex rentals, right? Like it's a flex thing. Like you just need to adapt. You just need to, the one thing I kept telling myself the first day of full-time self-employment, December 29th or 28th or whatever, was just keep swimming, sink or swim, sink or swim, sink or swim. So let's talk about your experience getting through COVID. Hey, I hope you guys are enjoying this episode, and I wanted to drop in quickly to let you know that our partners at Jetstream have some of the best-in-class technology that sits at the heart of the guest experience, with a focus on generating revenue for your property assets. With their platform, your property gets the best-in-class tech and integrations to remote access, guest screening, booking protection, and payment processing. Better yet, their team does all of the hard work of 24/7 guest communication and content creation. So go ahead, click the link in the show notes so you can jump on board today and take advantage of their professional hospitality team. Now, we're back to the episode. What kept you, you know, keeping the faith, so to speak?
Yeah, and I think a lot of it is down to resilience and grit. And just to say, we were with you at the shorties, you know, when you knew you had to go back. And yeah, and I think, was it your first trip outside of the US, or certainly to the UK?
Yeah, it was my first trip to the UK. I went to Mexico as a kid, but that's like the furthest I ever went.
Yeah, yeah. I think Helen and I wanted to mother you and make sure you were okay and everything. But just back to, so the pandemic, because I've been in travel for, you know, 25 years, I've seen actually a lot of things impact the travel industry. So 9/11, when it happened, people did for a period of time think that nobody would ever go on an aeroplane ever again. So it impacted the travel industry hugely. But of course, resilience, it all came back, and it came back even stronger. You know, more people were on planes, all the kind of the low cost carriers came in after that time. So what people thought was going to negatively impact travel, it was a blip. Saying that, you know, I've worked in the Canadian travel, Canada had SARS, you know, SARS outbreaks, you know, years ago that really impacted whether people would want to go there. So we've had, and again, after a blip, it comes back stronger. So I knew that, because if you think that we're in travel, whether we're in travel sort of an hour drive down the road or a flight across the world, we're still in travel. I knew that it would come back because, you know, as humans, we're innately desire to explore and to kind of and have hospitality and do different things and see different parts of the world, whether it is just parts of our own country, in domestic tourism, or it's further afield. So I kind of always knew that it would come back. And I just kept plugging away, you know, just kept the faith and just, you know, and I think I've been around in business to know that there are those peaks and troughs and there are those challenges. And a lot of it is about problem solving and moving through challenges rather than, you know, just giving up. And I think that, you know, I probably did have there was a period of about a week where I kind of thought, yeah, maybe I'll go and be a nurse or something, you know, or just do something different. But it was a fleeting, you know, as I've sort of said, it's in my DNA to grow something and create something and fix challenges and find solutions. So, you know, there was no question that it wouldn't just keep going forwards. But I also have to do things like take care of myself really well. You know, I have a meditation practice, I exercise, I rest, I have a really good work-life balance, you know, those sorts of things so that I've got what I need to do a really good job when I need to do it.
Did you start implementing better work-life balance during COVID, or was that always a practice prior to everything happening? I think a lot of founders that I've noticed or have interviewed, they've either had it in the beginning because they knew that they needed some kind of unplug. The one like thing at any social setting, people are like, what do you do for work? And I tell them, you know, run a podcast, blah, blah, blah. And then they go, oh, that's really great. What do you do for a hobby? I'm like, I don't have a hobby. For you, did you always have that kind of practice in place, or did kind of COVID help you reset with that?
I did actually already have that in place. So I had those foundational skills and I guess an inner resource as well. I kind of already had that. But, you know, COVID was difficult for other reasons. You know, I have two children, you know, suddenly they're at home and I'm trying to get them to learn, you know, they're teenagers. So, you know, I was lucky in a way that they could sort of teach themselves, but still, you know, that was kind of the challenge, was how to sort of navigate that.
While managing your own workload. Can I ask for the audience sake, I know we've mentioned about PR a couple times, but what really goes into PR? You and I kind of geeked out a little bit about this on our pre-call, but, you know, saying PR isn't just a press release. It's not just submitting an article to a news publication, but what really goes into what you guys do and what you build? Because obviously a team of 10 is no thing to kind of bat an eye at, right? Like you've built something where you've provided enough work for 10 people to really provide value into the industry, whether it's for the clients or for the readers or for even the news outlets that, you know, we can consider us part of that. You know, we get to interview a lot of your clients. So what really goes into a PR company?
Yeah, no, it's a really good question. And if we think about what we do, one of the main things that we do for brands is that we build trust in them. So we build their reputation, their trust, and their influence. We do other things as well. We might help them get into new markets or help them position themselves in a way that they want to position. But essentially, it's around building trust in their offering so that they can make better sales or they can have better partnerships, those sorts of things. So typically when we start working with a company, we do foundational work. So we will look at their strategy, we'd look at their business goals and make sure that their PR goals or their content marketing. So we have two offerings. We do the PR, which is all the kind of third party stuff. And then we do the content side, which is all blogs, white papers, et cetera, for their own inbound. But so essentially in the beginning, we'd look at what do they need to achieve? What are their business goals? How can we help them reach their audiences and influence their audiences in a way that builds trust in them? So we do that kind of foundational work. We do things like, how do we talk about them? How do they talk about themselves? What kind of publications kind of fit them? What stories? It's a lot of looking at what stories we can talk about them. We do all B2B PR. So we don't do any kind of consumer, or very little consumer facing stuff. So a lot of it might be around looking at thought leadership development. So looking at their C-suite and what can they add to the conversations that are going on in the marketplace, in the industry. We do things like speaking, you know, we help to get them speaking opportunities, conference opportunities. We look at data that they could be using and, you know, data sources that they could be looking at in order to tell data stories in the industry. So on a kind of a typical engagement, and I always say press releases, really there's only two news. It's funding and acquisitions. That's really, the rest is news. But it's news that we need to get out there, but it should only really be 10% of a PR program. The rest is around, you know, looking at other ways to execute, getting your name out there, helping people understand what you do. So that might be through editorials, bylines, interviews, comment. It could be through the content side of things. Speaking opportunities, awards, you know, all of that. So it's a kind of a full circle package.
That's awesome. And can you describe for just listeners and even for myself, maybe, you know, the difference between B2B and B2C? Because I think, like, I know we're very much a B2B brand when it comes to podcasts, because we really address the operators. We don't address the guests and the traveler as much. But for you, what does that look like when you're kind of, you know, working with a client on this, and maybe the big difference points that anyone listening could really apply to their strategy?
So I actually, when I started my career, I was B2C. So B2C, business to consumer, typically for the tech companies, but also, you know, large property managers or any kind of property managers, it's actually business to business. So most property managers don't struggle to get guests, you know, if they're using the channels and the distribution. You know, it's not really about the problem about getting guests. It might be about getting better guests or better paying guests, but it's really about getting the owners, you know, and growing the inventory so they can grow their businesses. But because we work with the tech companies, their customers are the operators. It might be, there'll be influencers as well. So typically it's the operator that will buy the SaaS product, but they're influenced by their owners, or they might be influenced by the guests as well, wanting a particular feature or having a need. So for instance, you know, during COVID, more and more guests wanted keyless entry and that kind of thing, so that they're an influencer to the purchasing decisions of the property manager. But you could say that we're B2B to C as well. So our customers are, you know, their guests. So guests are fundamental, and whether those guests are in a short-term rental property or a hotel, or, you know, some of the other sectors that we're going into, which is the senior living, the later living, the retirement villages, whether it's tenants in those or tenants in multifamily, they're vital. Like, we cannot ignore them, but they're not the ones that are putting their money in their pocket and buying something, but they could be, they're influencer buyers. So the business to business is that we're reaching businesses, not consumers. However, businesses are full of individuals. You know, I don't know if you have this phrase in the US, but, you know, over here we say people do business with people.
Yeah.
So it's about making sure there's that visibility as well, and realizing they're not a commodity. Like, they do have individual challenges and needs and personas and all of that. So really it's just that. And I've done lots of B2C, but I love B2B because we're able to shape. And we work, quite often we'll work with the C-suite, with the companies, you know, we'll work with the CEO, or and we're able to kind of get that, do a two-way conversation by providing them with insight, but also getting their feedback as well. And I don't think you get that in a B2C environment so much.
Yeah. And that's a big reason kind of why we're, for the, at least the podcast that you're on now, is why we kind of shifted away from like interviewing directors or even just even a COO. Like, we want to interview the founders and the CEOs that are making the big decisions, because it makes a little bit more of a difference on the conversation and flow, especially because you're getting that direct, you know, type of access. So I'm pretty sure you're seeing that with, you know, all the PR stuff that you guys are doing. But I kind of want to ask, on going into, in the beginning, you said when you started Abode, you really went into short-term rentals, right? That was your niche. You were specifically B2B short-term rentals. And now you've expanded into not only hotels, but now talking about senior living and co-living and all these other things. So what is your biggest lesson learned, or the biggest thing that you've taken from the short-term rental phase of your business to the now broader sense of travel, living, and overall lodging, I guess you can call it?
Yeah, and it's not by coincidence that we're now entering these other markets. I mean, partially it's because we've worked with clients that are looking into these other sectors, and we didn't see that before COVID. You know, everyone was right, STR, vacation rentals, that's the only place we're going to be. But we've worked, you know, we've worked with a number of companies that are looking at, some are looking at hotels and still staying in that travel. Others more the multifamily, the flex, but also, you know, senior living. And I think the thing about short-term rentals is the technology has made great waves. You know, it's really disruptive. There's lots of young companies. And by that, I don't mean young as in, you know, young in years. I mean young, yeah. But also just innovative, young, kind of feisty. And there's been a lot of that. And that, I think that the potential in those other lodging sectors is huge. You know, not just for, you know, it's huge because a lot of the solutions that we have in short-term rentals, not all of them, of course, but even if it's not the exact company, but with translation, they can fit in these other things. Because what have you got? You've got property managers. All those other verticals have property managers or hotel managers. They also have guests, tenants. Guest experience is really important. Managing operational management is really important. So it's kind of a natural fit, not just for us, but with a lot of the vendors, I believe, as well.
Totally agree. And that was the biggest thing I think I saw when I was a hotel manager, was going into, you know, as I was putting my toe into vacation rentals, I was like, the technology is really solving the issues I'm experiencing as a hotel manager. I'm getting calls from my front desk agents at night, in the morning, in the afternoon, because booking.com didn't sync with this and didn't sync with that. Now we have guests showing up with no reservations. And it's just like all this craziness that you're like, why is this so old and legacy? Like, it doesn't make sense. It was broken. And then seeing the vacation rental side just really innovate into that, especially with operations, you know, going into, you know, companies like Breezeway and others. It's crazy to see how many problems have been solved in such a, I guess, underlooked or undervalued sector of hospitality. I would say in that time, you know, hotels were very much, you know, screw short-term rentals. We're going to regulate them. We're going to get them out of business. Airbnb's the worst. They're taking our business, blah, blah, blah. So it's very interesting to see kind of now the shift, right? Now that all the tech is kind of saying, hey, we're not just short-term rentals. We perfected it over here. Kind of like what you guys are talking about with the Abode, right? We've been in short-term rentals. Now let's bring the world to what we've done. And it's really incredible and kind of fun to watch on a higher level scale for me, at least.
And I think the thing with short-term rentals, and I've heard others say this, is that they're difficult to manage. Like, they are a difficult business to run. So if you can solve solutions in that business, it's a lot easier to do it in a hotel that has 50 of the same rooms, you know, not units spread out all over town, or, you know, so if you've got that, if you've been smart enough to solve solutions there, you can do it elsewhere as well.
100% agreed. Well, one of my favorite wrap up questions, and just kind of questions in general for that I was thinking about for you, is, you know, you've been multi entrepreneur. It's in your DNA. You talk about it multiple times on the episode already. If you could have one listener, or any listener that's listening to this episode or that comes across you in Abode, what was the one thing that you've learned or taken from your entrepreneurial journey and that you would say would be really important for anybody else to kind of just be aware of or to think about when they get into this, I don't know if you call it a journey or a lifestyle or whatever, but what would that one thing be?
I'd say that it's harder than it looks would be one. But at the same time, it's easier than it looks. And that's just kind of a paradox, because you've got to go through, you know, you have to just keep, and it's the grit and resilience that we talked about before. You know, when something disappointing happens, you know, a key member of staff leaves, or a client leaves, or, you know, you don't get the thing that you thought you were going to get. It's keeping at it. Or COVID comes and it smashes out your business. You know, yeah. It's keeping at it. Keep doing the next right thing. Keep the resilience going. Always be honest and transparent in your dealings. You know, I believe in business karma. You know, what you put out there does come back. So, you know, always kind of just be a good person in business as well, I think is really important. Now, I'm really big in wanting to support women in business. And so that's something that also, you know, there are challenges. And, you know, it's not a sort of coincidence or whatever that we don't see many females at the real C-suites of various companies, because we don't, or on board seats. So that's something as well that is quite dear to my heart.
I love that. Yeah, no, it's I'm a man of five sisters and like way more nieces than I have nephews out of the 11 of them. So I am very passionate about that as well. And I think what you're doing, just setting a good example, right? Like, I think that's, we don't have enough good examples, if that makes sense. We have great founders and entrepreneurs, but there's a lot of the bad apples that get the attention. And that's what sucks about the whole, you know, I guess maybe not PR, maybe it's a PR thing. Maybe their PR people are just really good at finding the bad press releases to put out there, but it's just very much, yeah, I don't know. I don't really know how to like tie that thought up, but yeah, I love that you're doing that. And just being a good example, I think one thing that I learned from my time in the military was one of our platoon sergeants said that, you know, we set the standard, right? Like, we have the standard of here. This is what the Army tells us we need to do. We can set it higher. We don't need to just settle for this. So I think what you're doing is really setting a standard that not only was here for a lot of people, but now you've raised it. So it's really cool to see you bring that challenge to life. One last question that I have, and it's always my favorite question to ask for everybody that is on the show, but if you could put one link in the show notes for any listener to click immediately and follow you or check out, would it be your website, LinkedIn? What would it be for them?
I think it would be my personal LinkedIn, because I'm always really big on personal connections and you know, just meeting people in the industry, whether they're a property manager with five properties, you know, or a potential client. You know, I love to know what people's challenges are and what's keeping them up at night, but what also they're really excited about. So probably my personal LinkedIn.
Perfect. Well, I'll make sure that we link it in the show notes for everybody so that they can connect with you. I love LinkedIn, so I'm glad you chose that one instead of, you know, Instagram or Facebook. But this has been a really fun episode, Jessica, and getting to hear your story and diving into the kind of just the amazing growth and business that you've built is really incredible. So you're not just the woman behind the scenes creating this PR masterpiece for everybody else, but you are an incredible founder yourself. So it's just really cool to get your story out there.
Thank you, Will. That's really sweet. Thank you.
Of course. Well, listeners, you have heard it here first. So if you liked what you heard in this episode, go ahead and check out the show notes, like and subscribe to Everything Abode PR, and follow Jessica on LinkedIn. And of course, we'll see you guys all again next week. Thank you so much for listening, and thank you to our show partners for making Slick Talk, the hospitality podcast, possible. We hope you enjoyed the show, and we would love to connect with you outside of the podcast. So you can follow us on all of our social media channels for daily hospitality content, or find us on slicktalkthepodcast.com. And don't forget to rate, review, and subscribe so you never miss an episode. I'm your host, Will Slickers, and we will see you guys all again next week. As I've been growing my business and finding new ways to add to my property portfolio, I have to think about how I can anticipate the homeowner's needs, just like I do for my guests. One of the things owners always ask is, how is my property going to be protected? What happens if something gets damaged or worse? These are valid questions and concerns, and I have an opportunity to address these concerns before they even get mentioned, all thanks to having Safely as part of my toolkit. I can ensure all stakeholders are covered during a guest stay and use this information as a way to grow my business by ensuring my property owners know they can trust that I have them covered. If you're a professional property manager, then you need to get Safely in your tool belt so you can focus on operating and growing your business. Thanks for listening to Slick Talk, the hospitality podcast. Now, back to an episode. What's up, everybody? If you've gotten this far into the episode of Slick Talk, the hospitality podcast, then you are amazing, and thank you so much for tuning in. We want to send you two places really quickly. If you can, check out the show notes and click the hospitality.fm link. Check out all of our other shows on the podcast network. And don't forget, if you have someone that you want to hear on the podcast, then fill out the guest fill out form so that way we can get them on the show. Thank you so much for tuning in, and I hope you enjoy another episode of Slick Talk, the hospitality podcast.